We do not have a quorum yet, but we are going to start the meeting. I'd like to welcome you all here. When a quorum arrives, I'll be gaveling the committee in for its official meeting. Just a couple of quick comments before we get started. What we're doing today is informational hearings only. These bills are not in the possession of this committee at this time, so we will not be taking any official action on any of these bills, but we will be hearing testimony and gathering information regarding these issues. Second, if you have an agenda, you'll note that I have a bill at the end of the agenda, but that bill is not going to be heard today, so we'll be hearing the other bills, but not mine. So with that, Kelly, how are we doing? Not yet. Okay. We will get started. We have a Representative Nornes's bill with us first. Representative Nornes, would you care to introduce your bill?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members. This is House File 675, and the bill deals with a water issue, severe high water issues. Isn't that the right bill? Oh, I got the wrong bill. Sorry.
Try 563.
That says Fabian on it. What's the bill number we got here?
563.
Somebody can have it. I'm sorry, I just grabbed something up in the top and didn't look at it. So let's start over. Here we go. 563. This deals with a water situation in Otter Tail County that has reached the level of an emergency. It's a flood that will not go away. And judging by the number of people that have made the trip down here today to be a part of this presentation, you can see how serious it is. And we have a lot of people that have been sending emails and letters, and I have to thank them all because, unlike other campaigns that we've witnessed here in the legislature, they've all written personal letters and included pictures along with some of them about their specific situation. So this is a large problem that we need to solve as a state and a county, and I think at this point we have PowerPoint presentation. I think that's the first thing on our agenda.
Thank you, Representative Nornes. We have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting to order. Do we have minutes?
We have minutes.
From which meeting? February 19th. Minutes from the February 19th meeting. Representative Tice, would you care to move to approve the minutes?
I would love to move the minutes.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed by the same sign. Minutes are approved. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Chairman Torkelson. My name is County Commissioner Doug Hipsch, and with me...
My name is Angela Willenbring. I'm Vice President of the Little MacDonald Curbs Lake Association.
And we also have Commissioner Wayne Johnson and Public Works Director Rick West. So again, thank you, Chairman Torkelson and committee members for hearing us. We sincerely appreciate the time that you're giving us. Otter Tail County is located in northwest Minnesota. In Minnesota, lakes are a part of our lives. In fact, we are the land of 10,000 lakes, as indicated by our license plates. People in the gallery are indicative of the passion people have for the lakes. They use the lakes for swimming, boating, ice fishing, polar plunging, stargazing, but more than that, they're used to create relationships with friends and family. The word lake transcends faith, family, fun, and free time. We are here because we are having severe flooding problems in five pristine lakes in northeastern Minnesota, northwest Minnesota. These five lakes do not have a natural outlet. Over the last decade, the flooding has been getting continually worse, and since the flooding does not have a start and a stop date, it doesn't meet FEMA standards for disaster relief. We have a proposed solution that would normalize the situation, and the solution is a collaboration that involves Otter Tail County, four townships, and two lake improvement districts. Otter Tail County is over 2,000 square miles and has a population of about 58,000 people, and the population swells to almost $200,000 in the summer months. We have more than 1,000 lakes in Otter Tail County, more lakes than any other county in the United States. Everyone owns the lakes. Everyone can use the lakes as they please. We measure the land and building values around the lake based on sales, but the lakes themselves are priceless. If we had to put a value on these lakes, it would be in the billions. Since everyone owns the lakes, it's everyone's responsibility to protect and preserve these lakes forever. We are only the current stewards. Next slide. The flooding is occurring in the Perm Dent region. The lakes are known for being the cleanest in Minnesota. Before the flooding started, the clarity of some of these lakes was up to 34 feet. We have tremendous job growth in our area of the county, and most of the homes are year-round homes. We have very limited housing, and virtually every home and apartment is filled. We are at full occupancy in northeast Otter County. We are hardworking, modest middle class. We are raised to give more than we take. We take pride in producing things on our farms and in our factories. In Otter County, we make Lund boats, Tuffy's dog food, Barrel of Fun snacks, Bongard's cheese, only to name a few. We value add what we have, potatoes, edible beans, dairy, etc. We are the number one cow-calf county, and we raise a lot of turkeys in Otter County. Tourism is also very important to our economy. Coffee shops, lake service providers, and resorts make their living off these lakes. The lakes are surrounded by roads and railroads, and that's our problem. Back when the land was developed, the important thing was getting the crops to town. And we didn't take a lot of consideration to building outlets and whatever. So with current precipitation trends, it's increased the flooding and it's continually getting worse over the last decade. It's continually gotten worse every year. And it goes down, but it goes up, and it's ratcheting up. And as waters rise, the costs go up exponentially. We can embrace innovation and technology, and we have an engineered, environmentally compatible solution.
Many of the homes that are built on the Four Lakes were built in the 1970s. These homes were built 75 to 100 feet back from the edge of the lake, and vertically, the vertical rise from the edge of the water to the foundation of the homes was 6.5 feet. These homes were built to code. None of them were built in risky or low-lying areas. Our water started rising 22 years ago, and we have been in a flood, literally, for 16 years. We thank you for this chance to share our stories with you, and I'm going to talk first about the picture that's circled on the left. This home was built in the 1960s. At that time, George Cooper Schmidt had 50 feet of beach and 50 feet of grass. You can see George's home now on the right side. In 2011, we're standing at the back of his property on the road, taking the picture so the lake is in the distance past his house. The beach that used to be existent is now covered by 3.5 feet of water. George and his wife, some of their best memories, the greatest joys in life, was spending time at the summer with their kids and the grandkids. But as their kids got older and the grandkids started growing, the lake started rising. They can't take their children, their great-children, their grandchildren, or their great-grandchildren to their home anymore. They haven't been able to use it since 1997. These are pictures of homes on our lakes. They're all very modest homes, and that's what the majority of them are. After 22 years of fighting the high water, of sandbagging, rip-rapping, raising lots, installing French drains, running sump pumps, and some of them have been running 24/7 for the last 4 years or more, we've lost 20 homes. There's another 122 homes that are in jeopardy. The Otter Tail County Assessor has a high water watch for a number of these homes, the 122. And if the water rises another foot or two, we will literally lose 35% more of our properties and homes. The unfortunate part of all of this is no one has insurance. Insurance doesn't cover basin flooding. It covers river flooding and tornadoes, but these residents have had to pay for all of the repairs on their own. And they've spent $9.3 million of their own money to repair the damages. I think the really sad story around our lakes, though, are the seniors. The seniors are losing their retirement homes. The home on the top left is owned by a farming couple in their 70s. They bought this home as their retirement home. Barb and Virgil spent $100,000 having their basement gutted, their shoreline riprapped, dikes and pumps installed. Their septic system was condemned, and they can't even get a new holding tank. Their home is filled with mold. Virgil is 77 years old, and he can't retire. He can't afford to retire. Their neighbor down the street, Irene Schultz, has six sump pumps running and has for years. She is 86 years old. Her son runs the family farm. and she would have come, but she felt she was too old to travel. Besides our homes that are threatened, we are losing our resorts. The resort you saw on the first few pages, page 4, is from Devil's Lake. This resort here is on Paul Lake. It is permanently closed because no one wants to rent a cabin that has 6 or 12 inches of water in it. The resort that was pictured on page 4 is threatened because no one wants to come to the lake. You cannot launch a boat or a jet ski, as the DNR had to close that public access. There's no beach, and that resort owner is, all of these are family-owned resorts, and they are in serious trouble of losing their family business.
The public infrastructure that we're losing include roads and DNR accesses. This is a picture of one of the accesses that's underwater. This access was just totally redone by the DNR, I don't know how many years ago, probably 3 or 4 years, and it's now underwater. So basically the accesses is inaccessible. So we have 2 out of our 4 accesses are accessible, and it's very dangerous. We also have a lot of roads and county roads and township roads that are underwater, and the solution is not to keep raising the roads when there's an outlet project that we can do, because raising roads only creates deeper lakes and extends the problem to the community members more.
I want to also speak to the roads for a moment. We have with us in our galley one of the gentlemen who was the supervisor of Edna Township, and during his tenure, when these pictures were taken in 2011, which was our highest flood year, and he spent every day coordinating with the fire departments, with the ambulance departments, and with the school buses, send out an email every day to let them know which road they could drive on to get to their residence. And because of his hard work, we actually saved several residents. A person on Devil's Lake had a heart attack, and if he hadn't had to work and get the roads raised and kept the ambulances and the fire departments current and up to date, that gentleman would have died. There were house fires along the lake, and the only reason they got there was because our township spent money to try to keep the roads, and it was a very difficult summer. Besides talking about homes and boat ramps, I want to show you some of the septic systems we have. Alongside that boat ramp that we just saw, there is a set of homes, 23 homes, and they had a common septic system. With all the high water and the groundwater now is about 8 inches below the surface if you're next to the lake, the county had to condemn all of those septic systems. It is actually impossible now to even install a septic holding tank, because it just pops out of the ground. No contractor will even attempt to install any septic tanks. Many homes really need to be torn down. You can see the picture of the mold. People are getting sick at our lakes. They shouldn't be there, but this is where they spend their summers.
Just a couple comments on the environment. We're having massive shoreline erosion, obviously. With high water, everything gets dragged into the lake. We're losing 100-year-old trees. People, I talked to one person earlier today, and they lost 30 feet of lakeshore, and that's pretty minimal. I mean, that's a lot, but other people have lost more. And with all these decaying trees that are falling to these lakes, we're increasing the phos levels in these lakes, and they're not in danger of we're losing the lakes yet, but they're getting in trouble. So we need to take the environment into consideration as we're doing this project. And we're in an EAW process now, and that's moving along, but there's also an environmental risk of doing nothing, and the cost will go up exponentially as the water rises. We all know that with floods.
I also want to speak to the fact that the people riprapping. When I first started on the lake board, I didn't really understand why people riprapped, and it is literally to save the shoreline. Big, steep cliffs like that are caving in all the way around all 4 lakes. And the people that have saved their shores, we have pictures in the galley if you want to see them, have literally saved their homes.
To speak to the economic cost of the flooding, we've lost about $16 million in estimated market value in 2011. This year's estimated market value will drop even more. Our residents have spent nearly $9.3 million to do repairs. Now, These aren't permanent repairs. These are just to save their properties to what they have. The The grand solution is what we're going to present. Otter Tail County and townships and utilities have also spent in excess of $1 million. As waters rise, out-of-pockets costs will escalate even higher. Lower valuations do not contribute to our tax base. And really, every home is important to our economy. We have hundreds of job openings in Perm, and housing is our limiting factor to fill in these jobs. So we need every house that we can get. We don't need to condemn a bunch more houses.
I want to speak to this house. The owner spent $100,000 to have all the mold removed from this home. They gutted the basement, and yet the mold count was still so high in the house that they had to actually rip out the kitchen cabinets. They replaced that. They lived in it for a while until it got to be too much. They continue to pump, but this winter has literally been the worst winter on record for us. And that might be surprising because we don't have very much snow, but the groundwater is so high and our lakes froze at the highest level ever, and that has caused a very unusual effect. But we've had people who, just like this house, their foundations are caving in. This house has, I was in the basement just a few weeks ago, and the basement of it actually shifted to the east about when I was down there, it was almost 8 inches shift. So the walls are teetering. They've put in support walls, and that wasn't enough because they are moving. They continue to move the ice swells, and they're now, you can see all the logs. They're going to actually raise this house, and it's going to cost another $97,000. We have spent a decade and literally $700,000 searching for options. You can see the different colored lines on the chart. We've looked west, we've looked east, we've looked northeast, and now we're looking north. Many routes turn out to be more expensive than the one we're proposing.
In, I believe, July, the governor visited and is aware of the situation. Later on, we had legislators Dowd and McNamara have also been to Otter Tail County for meetings. We've been in meetings for a long time, and waiting is not an option. And it's not fair to ask lake homeowners to bear the brunt of the cost when the lakes belong to everyone. They have spent so much already. You know, people are at their limits, and the residents are willing to pay the ongoing cost of maintenance and operating the outlet, but they can't afford the infrastructure as well. When valuations go back up, they will be asked to pay increased taxes as well. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't vitally important. Otter Tail County residents haven't asked for a lot. We tend to keep to ourselves. This is a real need with an enormous economic and societal return.
I want to speak to the last one before we move on. I talked a little bit about the 35% of the homes we're going to lose, but we need to talk a little bit about the overland flooding. Our lakes are situated such that they used to have a natural drainage. They would drain to the west into another series of lakes that drained into the Otter Tail River, and they would drain to the east, which would be another series of lakes that drained into the river. Those were blocked, as Doug said, by the roads and the railroad. We are at the point where in another 18 inches, our lakes will, Little McDonald, Curbs Lake, and Paul will drain into Devil's Lake. They are a lower-lying lake than ours. Of that 35%, 49% of it is Devil's Lake. The overland flooding will also carry invasive species with it. In 3 years ago, we've been doing testing on our lakes because we have some of the cleanest lakes in the entire state, and we're very proactive. We've never wanted any type of invasive species, so every year we've tested. Every year we've hired boat inspectors. We've been very, very proactive as a lake association and a LID. Unfortunately, 3 years ago, it was discovered that we have zebra villagers. We have tested since then. In the last 2 years, we have tested clean. We've had no zebra villagers at all. However, in this process, we've learned we need to filter, and that is part of our solution. The proposed solution is a venting system that will safely transfer the extra water from our lake. It will filter it in our lakes that are infested, and it will take it to the Otter Tail River. I want to speak about pumping. We know what it's like to live in a flood. We know the pain and the suffering that goes with that. And we wouldn't ever pump when lakes downstream are too high. We know that. We don't want to cause problems for our neighbors. Instead, we would be a holding pond. When the lakes downstream, the river could handle the water, we would release the water. It would all be taken care of in an operating plan run by the county. The system, the proposed solution we have is cost less than other options. Similar venting systems have been used very successfully on other lakes, and it would provide a regional, comprehensive regional solution for the problem. The filtering system is being investigated by the scientists at the DNR, as well as the scientists at the University of Minnesota here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. They have created a situation where it would be very safe for downstream lakes. The venting system would cost $10.8 million with an extra $150,000 to $200,000 operating cost. We are asking the state for a $10 million appropriation. We have already spent $9.3 million, and we are willing to pay all of the operating costs.
That concludes our presentation, Chairman.
Very good. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Tortelson. And how many pumps would be involved in this?
There would be pumps from the Little MacDonald Curbs Lake. Paul Lake would flow, it already does flow into the Little MacDonald Curbs Lake chain, and so they would pump out of that that lake, and then they would pump out of Devil's Lake, and we would meet together at a common pump, and from there we would go over a 90-foot hill. That's why it's so expensive to run the system. I could ask some of the members in my LID. I don't actually know the number of pumps.
The pumps are also sized to move 25 cubic feet per second of water.
So, Mr. Chair, does anyone have any idea how many?
Please.
Two pump stations. There would be one pump station from Devil's Lake into the system, and then one into Little Meadow. Two pumps per station.
So. Pumps per station.
Yeah.
All right, Representative Magenius.
I'm just curious.
Yep. Did you call me?
I did. Did you
Thank
have a question?
You. I did. Thank you.
Representative Magenius.
You do have a problem. I'm just trying to understand a little more about the cause of the problem, because now I'm going to make an assumption here that your lakes are above the ordinary high water mark.
We are. We're about 4.5 feet above the ordinary high at the highest.
Four above?
Yes. Right now we're at 4 feet.
Okay. So then help us understand why this has happened. You shouldn't be 4 feet above the ordinary high.
No.
Just to give us a little bit better understanding, because I want to know who is responsible for this.
Ms. Willendring.
Well, go ahead. Rick West, our county.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Rick West. I'm the Otter Tail County Public Works Director.
Thank you, Mr. West. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. In response to the question, Otter Tail County, since about 2002, and I believe it actually started beginning of the winter of 96-97, we had a massive amount of snowfall in our area and across the state of Minnesota. We've had what I call landlocked, isolated basins, which this is the same situation in many areas of our county. And they have no outlets. The water has to rise a considerable amount of elevation before it would outflow to a creek or another basin, a lower basin. We have constructed, I believe, 8 outlet systems during this time period. And this is another example of an outlet system. And we're in a wet period, at least in our area of the state of Minnesota. And that is really the underlying reasons here, is our aquifers are full, and we've received above normal participation for a good number of years. There's an area north of New York Mills, which is in the same area of the county, last June and August that had 24 inches of rainfall in 2 weeks. That's extremely unusual. I would also add, Mr. Chair, if I may, we have been down the road of raising highways to get out of the water. We have a dismal track record with that because we've raised some of our highways, our county highways, twice, and then we went on to build an outlet system because the water has kept coming up. So that's the history of it in a very short summary.
I'd like to follow up.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Okay. Getting to water, I want us to understand. So, I mean, you shouldn't even be above the ordinary high watermark even with a lot of rain. That shouldn't be happening. So it was highways built up that are blocking? Because if that's the case, then the state does have responsibility here. I mean, so that's what I'm trying to get at here.
Right. Mr. West.
Mr. Chair, committee members, that is true. Some of those our situations are exactly that.
Okay, and then did I hear...
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Did I hear that you say that railroads were also involved here, or railroad beds?
Mr. West.
In this situation, I believe that is correct. I think, Angela, you may have a follow-up.
Yes, there's a railroad...
Ms. Willenbring.
Thank you. Sorry. Yes, there is a railroad that's located less than a quarter mile from the west side of Little McDonald, and that our lake used to run west. When it overflowed, it would overflow the road because there was no road, and then it would continue past where the railroad bed is now, and it cannot go that way because of the railroad and the roads.
I mean,
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason, I mean, I'm totally sympathetic to this, but if there are folks that are caused this problem, we should be also asking them to help with the solution, and I am thinking about the railroads, and that's why I bring this up.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Believe it or not, as grim as these stories are, they're not unusual around the state, and the state participation isn't always as simple as one would think. And so I wanted to just talk a little bit about that. And mostly that is because we have to be fair to everyone. And because of that, there are so many water issues and so many flooding issues, all have a slightly different nature, that programs in our departments have grown up around that. Public Facilities Authority, certainly the DNR, has the flood mitigation. And Mr. Chair, from that perspective, I do see later that Mr. Lacasmo is here, and he may not have anything relevant to this, but if he did, it would be helpful perhaps to just get a bit of an education if there's something we're missing. So I put him on the spot, but since I spotted him. So my line of questioning is a little along the lines of Representative Wagenius. In other words, does everyone agree on the cause? And does everyone agree on the solution, and is that solution sustainable? And one of the letters we received, overwhelmingly many of you wrote and gave a similar point of view, but we did get one letter, and maybe has anyone asked to testify in opposition from that area? If not, I might just reflect what this letter says so that you might have an opportunity to respond, and I'll just very briefly pull out a few lines. So this person said it was a private project for the benefit of private landowners. Historically, this lake improvement district was established for several reasons, like many of them, and one of the reasons was formed by the rising water and flooding. Historically, that district attempted to suggest another outlet using Otter Tail County Ditch 25. And then he says, my property and others downstream would have been negatively impacted had the County Ditch 25 plan succeeded. So there had been perhaps one suggestion. And this person goes on to say it was abandoned. They could not obtain the easements needed from the property owners. And then goes back to this sense of local people who say it's a private project benefiting a very select few property owners on the lakes that have been flooded. Many of the flooded and most heavily impacted properties are built on lake bottom or marginal land and, in fact, were once part of the lake or the natural floodplain of the lake. He quotes an elderly farmer who says that all the properties once belonged to his family farm. The property in question was under several feet of water and was once part of the lake when he was a child. Then it dried up in the 30s. The water came back over the years, then it dried up again. So it cites this history and suggests that the Lake Improvement District, at least locally, doesn't necessarily have a united front, but we perhaps don't have any of those people here today. There is much dissension among the rank and file. Many question the cost of the project, taxation, fair and just cost sharing of the project. And that gets me back to the whole issue of everyone worries, are we being fair to everyone? In White Bear Lake, their water is disappearing, and they want us to help. But we're not sure about the cause, and we're not sure about the solution. In Bovee, a few years ago, they had your problem. The lake was rising, and the homes were threatened, but the solution had huge disagreement around it. And in that case, and I don't know if Mr. Lockesma was part of that one, but I know the DNR and the homeowners had very different points of view about the solution. So I raise this to say everyone understands a huge personal challenge, but the question we'll ultimately have is, with lots of water issues, lots of flooding issues, how are we fair to everyone, and are we sure when the state invests money that it will solve the problem for the long term?
Thank you, Representative Hausman. I didn't really hear a direct question in there, but perhaps we can get a response anyway.
No, those were all things that I would be interested in their response.
Okay. Who would like to respond?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hirsch.
Representative, hear your comments loud and clear. I think the thing that we have to remember is the DNR is the one that sets the high level mark on the ordinary high level mark on the lakes, and that's determined from centuries old soil bore testing and whatever else, and that's the best place for lakes to operate. And the lakes are owned by all of the people in the state, not just the select few that live around them. We can take our boats and vote on any lake that we want. So as problems come up on lakes, whether it's too low or too high, I would encourage the legislature to take a look at them individually and solve the problem, because we are the current stewards. We have to take care of this environment, and the environmental damage that's happening around these lakes is astronomical. And I invite any of or all of you to come up and look at it. But we're spending $1 billion to build the dome over there, which I like the Vikings and I like the dome, but in 40 or 50 years, that might be gone or it might still be here. We don't know. These lakes are here forever. What are they worth? What's a 1,200-acre lake worth that has clarity of 34 feet? The investment we make in these now is forever, for all of us, for generations to come. So we have to assess the environment. We have to engineer solutions, because when we built the roads and when we built the railroads, that was the last thing on their mind, was protecting our lakes. Now we know how valuable they are to our tourism and to our local economy. I personally, when I'm not a county commissioner, I own a couple of businesses in town, and we're totally dependent on these lakes to bring in customers. And our economy goes up fourfold in the summer months. And I guess you're never going to get everyone on board with any project that you do, and the downstream interest. We're going to have an operation plan where it couldn't possibly hurt them. As regards to the Ditch 25 outlet, we weren't in a position to want to take land or secure easements forcibly. We wanted to make this work for everybody, and so that's why we chose this other route. Plus, this new route also helps Devil's Lake vent their water, and the old route wasn't Devil's Lake wasn't a concern.
This is the Devil's Lake in Minnesota, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's a good point, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. President Hausman has a follow-up.
And then, Mr. Chair, no follow-up. He got to my point. I did wonder about the
very good.
25. Next. But if Mr. Lockesmo has information relative to it, I wonder if you would be open.
It looks like he's willing. While he's on his way down, we'll go to Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have two questions. One is to Ms. Dyson, because the slide that we're seeing right now talks about operating. And just want to I don't – am I correct in that we are unable to provide operating costs as a capital expenditure?
You aren't correct, Representative Hansen, but I don't believe the ask includes the operating costs. They are going to stand for them themselves is what I was told, and I think they made that clear in their presentation.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to get that on the record from Ms.
Very
Dyson.
Good.
She's nodding, but is.
Mr.
All right.
Chair, Representative Hansen, you're correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then my second line of questions, if we could go back to the earlier slide that had the map of the lakes. Yeah, that slide. And kind of following up on Representative Wagenius's question, if I heard correctly, the water has been going up for about 22 years. Is that right? And, Mr. Chair, I see some circles on the map. So I'm wondering, what's the conversion? This used to be forest land 20 years ago. How many new tile systems have been installed over the years? How much new irrigation wells have gone in? Just kind of that land cover mapping, do we have that data from the county in terms of changes on the upgradient management of the soil?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, thanks for the good question. The number of irrigation wells has gone up quite a bit. It's approximately around 100 new wells in the last couple of years. It's kind of corn price kind of drives that. But as far as tiling goes, it's a very sandy soil. We have very little tiling in this area of the county. And in fact, I don't know of any in this exact area. So the tiling has not gone in. And Ottawa County is a big county. We're 2,000 square miles, and we have 62 ditches in our county that we manage. But does that answer your question, Mr. Chair?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One follow-up. So yeah. On the irrigation wells, are they into shallow aquifers? In the shallow aquifers, are they going deeper into deeper groundwater, a different aquifer than, say, shallow lens aquifers close to the surface?
Mr. Chair.
Hibbs.
Representative, yes, they are deep wells. Primarily, I would say, are in that 150 to 200 foot range.
Another follow-up, yep. Representative Hansen.
So I understand the sandy area in that area. So it's probably not that conducive to tile. Is there any open ditching or new conveyances that may be going in?
Mr. Hibbs.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I would say no, that there's not. Creating ditches in this day and age is pretty difficult. That's the first thing. And the second thing is an open ditch might solve the problem, but it might be without concern to downstream interests. So whatever we do up here, we don't want to create one solution by creating another person's problem. So the operating plan will be, now this is going to sound real small town to you, and we are small town, so I apologize for that. But there's a rock over at Chatsky's Bridge, and if you can see the rock, they said they can take the water. So all of us have known that rock for our whole life, and we know if we can see the rock, you're going to have a problem getting your boat lifts off. So thank you.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but I thought we were going to hear from Director Lacasel.
We are, but I'm going to try and get through these questions real quick.
I'd like to defer for a moment.
All right, that's fine. Well, let's, Representative McGinnis, did you have something at this point?
I do, thank you.
Quickly.
As we're talking about the solution here, can I assume that you are going to be respecting the high water mark and that you will not draw down in your plans anything below the high water mark? I mean, I think Representative Hausman brings up a good, hugely good caution here.
Mr.
Chairman, Representative, yes, we would not go below the ordinary high. That's kind of the DNR rules, and we respect that, and we they set it for us, and any projects we've ever done around these lakes, because that's the correct level to operate lakes at, not 4 feet over. Thank you.
Thank you. At this point, we'll hear from the director. Please introduce yourself for the record and give us whatever information you feel is appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kent Lacusmo, I'm the Director of Capital Investment for DNR. And just a couple comments. Certainly, the ordinary high water level is a level that's set based on the physical evidence where water has remained long enough to leave evidence. So it's they can be much higher than a current water elevation, or in this instance, lower than the current water elevation. And as far as what elevation they would ultimately could pump to, the current Minnesota rules would provide that for a landlocked lake, you could go no lower than a foot and a half below the ordinary high water level. But I understand their proposal is just to go to the ordinary high water level. The we have funded through the flood hazard mitigation program lake outlets in on other lakes. Lake Pulaski, if you remembered from the 70s, 80s, that was very high. Big Marine Lake, as Representative Hausman said, the Canisteo mine pit was a similar situation of a landlocked lake, and there was a disagreement on what the correct solution was. We wanted something that was going to be easy to maintain. The locals had preferred a siphon system, which are very difficult and very expensive to operate, and we prefer just a pumped or gravity outlet. So I think that's the other thing that I heard earlier that I should maybe comment on is I think somebody said that insurance doesn't cover lake flooding. Flood insurance could cover lake flooding if, in fact, I'm presuming that Otter Tail County participates in the National Flood Insurance Program. So their residents, I'm not positive on that. But if they do participate in the National Flood Insurance Program, residents would be eligible to purchase flood insurance. And flood insurance...
Before
the flood, yes. Before the damage occurs. And I'm not sure if I covered all of Representative Hausman's points, if you had a specific question.
I have a question, Director. Sure. So has the ordinary high water mark for these lakes been established?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
And then, Mr. Chair, to their proposed solution, and maybe this is all very clear, it says, we'll pump only when downstream neighbors can handle extra water. How does that decision-making happen among...
Mr.
Player.
Chairman, Director Representative Hausman, through the permit process, we would determine an operating plan, and that the operator, whether it's the county or Lake Improvement District or whomever, would follow that plan.
And then just one more, Mr. Chair, if I could.
Representative Hausman.
Why wasn't this on the radar screen of flood mitigation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, what we've identified in our various lists for flood mitigation are those projects that have made application to the process. And now we did have some, I think, money into this project years ago for some planning dollars, some general fund dollars. And recently there hasn't been much discussion until just this year.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Director Lacusmo. I'm glad to hear that the DNR is involved with this. I just look at this situation here. This is really developed into an emergency situation, and it seems to me that mistakes were made in the original siting of the roads and the railroads and things that are obviously beyond the control of the Lake Owners Association and everybody else. And this has been a situation that's been going on for a long, long period of time. We at the legislature here are elected to help people, and we've got a lot of people that need help. And we do many flood control projects here in our committee, and we do have, you know, a classic example here of people working together with the county, the DNR, and the Lake Owners Association, and everything else. Mr. Chair, my question was for you. What are we intending to do? Are we going to put this in the bill? Are we going to lay this over? What are you thinking about this?
This is an informational hearing, and there are no intentions at this point.
All right.
Thank you, though, for the
Sorry
question.
To put
I
you on the spot.
It's quite all right. I'm used to it. I have two more questions, then we're going to have to move on. We've gone well past our point of time. Representative McGinnis, you had a question?
Well, I do think we need to understand who the responsible parties are here, and that I'm not thinking it's the lake folks. I am thinking it's the railroad folks. I want to know how much county road was the problem, how much state road was the problem, how much is the railroad's problem. Because we should be talking to the folks who created the problems before we ask the general taxpayers of Minnesota to pay for it. I actually think you need help, but I do think there are responsible parties here, and we ought to be talking to those responsible parties. And that's part of our obligation.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hansen, a final question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was, Lacusmo got out of the stand before I got the question to him. So if Mr. Lacusmo could come back. Mr. Lacusmo, I want to follow up on the irrigation questions that I was asking. And can you get the committee the kind of a chronology of the wells going in and how they've gone in and what their capacity is in this area? Is that possible to provide?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Director Representative Hansen, not off the top of my head, although I'm sure we have records of this general vicinity on what exists for existing permits and the irrigation wells that we can provide for the committee.
And follow up quickly, Representative
Mr. Chair, who owns the wells, most of the wells?
Mr. Chairman, it would be the landowner, either the local farmer or municipality that's utilizing the water.
And Mr. Chair, is there a common landowner that owns most of the wells?
Well, Mr. Chairman, certainly in the Park Rapids area, I mean, there's been the potato farming and the R.D. Offutt company owns a bunch. Whether or not they've extended down to this area or not, maybe some of the local representatives could answer that better.
Director Lacusmo, can you imagine in any way that irrigation wells would affect these lake levels to make them go higher?
Mr. Chairman, the only way that would happen is if they were pumping excess water and it was running off. Typically, they pump only the water they need to sustain the crop or the purpose.
Thank you, Director. We've gone well past our time. Representative Norris, would you have any final comments for us?
Mr. Chair, I really appreciate you doing what you've done today, allowing the time for testimony. I just wanted to make one comment. If we're going to wait for the railroad to help us, I think that would be a long, long wait. I do remember in past bonding issues, pictures of Fargo-Moorhead and the floods that they've had up there and the sandbagging and all of the work that's done. You'll notice on these pictures that you've seen today a lot of sandbagging, but those sandbags don't go away. That's the real situation. This is a flood, just like Fargo-Moorhead, but this water is not going away. So that's what the committee has to consider. With that, again, I thank you very much.
Well, thank you for bringing this issue forward. I'd like to thank everyone who's come here today to observe our doings, and thanks to the testifiers for a compelling presentation, and we look forward to dealing with this issue if we possibly can. You're not required to stay for the whole committee meeting if you don't care to, but you certainly can if you'd like.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, committee members.
With that, we'll... We're going to continue the meeting now. Please, if you could quickly vacate the room. Representative Carlson, I believe you are up.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Please go ahead.
did happen to ask Representative Nornes if anybody was left in the town up there for the turnout that they had on that last bill. But I'm pleased to be back here, as some of the members know.
Representative, could you move the microphone a little bit closer?
I served on this committee, if I recall correctly, from its inception. At one time, we handled all capital through what we called the Appropriations Committee then, and then we created the Capital Investment Committee. So long history on the committee, and it's nice to be back. Mr. Chairman and members, before you is House File 1041, a bill which sets aside $24 million in state bond proceeds to address ongoing flood mitigation hazards in the West Metro cities of Crystal, New Hope, and Golden Valley. So this is a project that is what I would describe as regional approach, a regional approach dealing with three cities. As you can see in the handout materials, and I hope you receive those, the specific area that we are focusing on has been significantly impacted since the 1970s by severe stormwater runoff, and it's getting worse. It's in an area east of Highway 169, if you're familiar with the northwest suburbs, where two major arterial county roads intersect and the boundaries of three communities come together. The impact of this ongoing flooding has been tremendous in three primary ways. First, its local impact. More than 40 homes and businesses are directly affected with the flooding when there are severe storms. Second, is regional impact. More than 10,000 cars, trucks, and buses use these corridors of commerce daily and pass through these intersections on their way to industrial areas, local malls, homes, nearby playgrounds, and nearby a nearby regional high school. It is important that these three communities have some relief as a result of that flooding and the impact on the area. The final effect of this flooding has been on future housing and economic redevelopment. Golden Valley alone is projected to have 4,000 more people and 9,000 more jobs in the next 20 years. This area is primed to accommodate this growth. The Golden Valley, a developer has been looking at this area, but has concern before they would begin to develop it as far as the flooding is concerned. So, Mr. Chair, I wanted to let the committee know that from the city of Golden Valley, I have the mayor, Shep Harris, a city council member, Andy Snow, and here in the audience, others representing the other cities as well. We're going to have Jeff Oliver be the main spokesperson, with others available to answer questions. But we did want you to know that all three cities are here in strong support of the project. So if it's all right with you, Mr. Chair, if we could turn it over to Mr. Oliver.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jeff Oliver. I'm the city engineer for the city of Golden Valley. First of all, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, for hearing us today. It's a pleasure to be here to discuss this important issue for our three communities. The Tacola Ponds and Medicine Lake Road watershed is approximately 1 square mile in area in the cities of Crystal, New Hope, and Golden Valley, as shown on the information provided to you. The watershed was developed primarily in the 1950s through the 1970s, and consistent with the development standards at that time, very little consideration was given to stormwater management, specifically rate control and flooding issues. The Tacola Ponds residential subdivision in Golden Valley occurred during the 1970s, and while there were ponds constructed with that development, that the intent, part of the intent was stormwater management, they're not sized appropriately to handle the runoff from a 1 square mile watershed. As a result, there's approximately 35 homes immediately surrounding the ponds that are subject to frequent flooding. We've experienced multiple flood events, including 1978, just a few years after the development was completed, and significant flooding in the superstorm of 1987, and repeated floods since that those events. Flood depths in the homes have been as great as 6 feet. Medicine Lake Road is a county state aid highway that serves as an arterial to the three communities. Medicine Lake Road handles approximately 10,000 vehicles per day, and there's five businesses along the intersection of Winnetka Avenue and Medicine Lake Road that are subject to frequent flooding. The flood levels in 2006 and 2010, the most recent flooding in this area, varied between 3.5 feet to 5 feet on the roadway and up to a foot in the buildings. And it's important to note that these rain events were not 100-year flood events. The current estimate in the Decola Ponds and Medicine Lake Road area, if we were to experience a 100-year flood event, would include damages in excess of $100 million. The three communities are currently finalizing a flood damage reduction study of the watershed. The goals of this study are to minimize flood damage to the homes and businesses to the extent possible. We'd like to keep Medicine Lake Road passable during emergency or for emergency vehicles during flood events. The intent is also to reduce and minimize the flood damages across the watershed and to permit redevelopment to occur with no risk of flood damage to the new buildings. We believe we can accomplish these goals with a combination of efforts, including construction of flood storage throughout the watershed, diversion of portions of the watershed away from the flood-prone area, minimizing runoff volumes, structural flood-proofing of some homes that we cannot lower the flood level far enough to protect, and finally, purchasing and removal of homes that cannot be protected no matter how much money we spend. The cost for the watershed-wide portion of this plan will range up to $24 million. Flood conditions in this area make our redevelopment efforts very difficult and expensive. There's a need to elevate buildings up to 2 feet above the flood elevations. We need to build flood storage primarily below ground. We've recently begun working with a developer who would like to build some multifamily housing in this area, and most of the property is subject to the flooding that we've been having here. The redevelopment opportunity gives us a chance to start implementing the big range picture by incorporating flood storage onto the redevelopment site. It is the start of the watershed-wide effort. It's our first bite at the apple. The estimated costs for this redevelopment effort range between $4 million and $8 million. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this with you, and additional staff from the City of Golden Valley, the City of Crystal, and New Hope will be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Representative Upham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question to the testifier here. In terms of the bonding request and things, is the city and also the watershed participating in the cost of this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the cities are currently, as the final phase of our study, working on possible funding scenarios that may include Hennepin County as well as the cities. The watershed, Bassett Creek Watershed, typically participates in projects on their trunk system. This is not part of the trunk system. However, we do intend to approach the watershed at some point in time to see if there can be some participation.
Representative Upham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So currently, right now, it's not in the watershed CIP?
Mr. Oliver.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So what is the what is the natural outlet for this water? Where does it normally go?
Mr. Chairman, there is a storm sewer system that drains the ponds, the Decola Ponds, as well as the Medicine Lake Road area. It outlets in the southeast corner of the development and flows eventually southeast into Bassett Creek. It's a complete gravity system, but it's undersized for the runoff that is tributary to the area.
And so this system is mostly underground in through this portion of the watershed?
That's correct.
And any idea what size that underground tile line is?
Mr. Chair, pipe sizes range from 2 feet to 6 feet at the downstream end, so it varies depending on location.
Sure. And so to handle this extra water, you said you're proposing underground storage. What else? What other projects are you considering?
Mr. Chair, we're considering underground storage on the redevelopment site, potential rate control ponds elsewhere in the watershed, other below-ground storage in the watershed, diversion of a portion of an industrial area that's immediately tributary. We believe we can divert that away from the flood-prone area. Combination of different measures.
So I assume this flooding is seasonal, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, it is primarily associated with heavy rainfall.
And over the last 10 years or so, how many flood events have you had?
Mr. Chair, I know of two specific events. There may be more in the residential area that have occurred. We have not heard from residents about that.
Just one final question from me. Any issues with the septic systems that are, might be affected by this flooding?
Mr. Chairman, this area is completely served by municipal sanitary sewer.
And so the flooding does not affect the workers of the sanitary sewer in any way?
Mr. Chair, we do believe that there are impacts for inflow and infiltration, which is clear water discharge into the sanitary sewer system that can and does discharge, exceed the capacity of the treatment plants and discharge into the Mississippi River.
Thank you. I expected as much. Representative Runbeck has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Your $24 million amount, do you have any breakdown, a rough breakdown of, the, you mentioned buying out some homes versus, I guess, the infrastructure?
Mr. Oliver.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I do not have the breakdown with me today. However, shooting from the hip, I would guess that the well over half of that amount would be for underground storage. It's very expensive to construct, especially considering the volumes that we need to have available. The rest of it would be probably 15% to acquisition of homes or structural flood proofing of homes, the rest of the money towards some of the other smaller diversion projects.
Thank you.
All right, I see no other questions. You don't have any irrigation wells in your area, do you?
Mr. Chair, we do not.
Maybe you should start irrigating something to get rid of some of this water. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Carlson, do you have any final comments?
I want to thank you and the committee for taking the time today to hear the bill.
Thank you for bringing this issue before us, Representative Carlson. We appreciate it very much. Next, we have Representative Peel. Representative Keel, if you'd like to give an opening statement, we'd appreciate it.
I would appreciate that. As you have heard, most of the members have heard about all the flooding in the Red River Valley, and this is a request for bonding for flood mitigation for the communities of Climax and Neillsville, smaller communities in my district, and both have some issues. But I brought a couple of gentlemen with to explain the details and how it's handled. So would you like me to? Yeah. So I'll have
Mr.
Harnack explain.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Ron Harnack. I'm the project coordinator for the Red River Watershed Management Board. I'd just like to say a couple overview issues. The Red River Valley has had a strong history of flooding historically. However, with the kindness of the legislature and the forward thinking of the Red River communities, we have gone a long, long way toward becoming more flood resilient from two aspects. One, by protecting the current infrastructure of our communities, and that's been primarily by structural measures. And the second part of that is through storing water or holding water on the land where it falls. And doing that in a fashion that we can provide significant protection for downstream rural areas, the rural infrastructure, as well as increasing the flood protection for our communities along the Red River of the North. And you're going to continue to see project requests come in for floodwater storage. I think as Mr. Lacasmo mentioned last week before you, we are close to achieving the protection for all our communities in the Red River Basin. And we're hoping that over the next few years we will be able to complete those components of those projects. Many of these are small communities. Their future is dependent upon having this kind of flood protection. If we had maybe been thinking differently 30 years ago, we might have done more emphasis on buyouts and so forth. But as most of you maybe are familiar with school consolidations and moving of communities, you know, it's not something that people look forward to very readily, and these are significant economic benefits to these communities. So I would like to turn it over to Dan Wilkins. Dan Wilkins is the administrator for the Sand Hill Watershed District, and the Watershed District is a co-sponsor with these two communities for their flood control project. And we're on the last phases of these projects. Money has already been allocated to them, and Dan can talk a little bit about where we are and where we're headed.
Mr. Wilkins, please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Dan Wilkins, and I'm the administrator for the Sand Hill Watershed, and I've been around a long time. I think my dad told me in 1973 that I couldn't establish a watershed district, and like every good kid, he went and proved him wrong. So I don't know if that was a good thing I did, but it's sure been a lot of work ever since. So. But anyway, getting to this, I guess I really appreciate the opportunity to speak on their behalf. A couple of the council members were thinking about coming, but they couldn't get out of work. And I said, so I'm only 71 years old, I'll do it. So here we are. We got two, of course. Ron took a little of my thunder, but we've been probably waiting 20 years to work these things through. They're small communities, so you kind of wait in line, you know. And I think, like Ron said, we're getting close to have them all buttoned up. And I think these are maybe the last two, aren't they? They're pretty close. So anyway, both these towns are 1 mile from the Red, so they get backup water every time it floods. It's not necessarily what comes from overland to them. It's the backup of the Red. So I think Climax kind of hit that one first in 97. I think if it would have got just a little bit closer, 2 feet higher, they wouldn't have had a town. That's how close it is. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Red or not, but as it goes north, there's areas where it can spread out 25 miles wide, and then there's spots where it's only a half mile wide. Climax is a half mile wide spot, so it's really prone to ice jams in that area. And if that would happen, it would not be pretty. It can jump 3 feet in a few hours. So they're really, really happy that they're on this list, and Climax has got quite a bit done. We've bought out 5 homes. Those folks were really tickled to get out of that area. Currently, we've got a contract that we just let 3 weeks ago to move the 2 lift stations that are outside the dike system. One of them, they practically, I think, 12, 15 feet of ring dikes around it to save it every time the water comes up. So that's under contract. So we got the homes, we've got that, we got a good share of the engineering done. And the basic piece left is get the right-of-way for the dike system that goes around it. And so you've got your handout, which kind of gives you all the number crunching and that sort of thing. I guess the next step is if we get this funds, we'd be able to take and complete this project and get that one behind us. So the other one, Neillsville, that one we've kind of set back a little bit because there's only so much funds, I realize, and Climax is moving along. This one, the funds there we've got a real opportunity. They're rebuilding Highway 75. It goes right through the town. And if we can get funding for this coming year to go along with that, we would save $400,000 in the road race part of it. And that's up in the northeast corner of the picture. You can kind of see the big line. That's the road race. But the water currently goes through the corner of town, and we've got to route it around that in order to do it. So it would be a real opportunity to take and, parlay with the Highway Department to be able to MnDOT save $400,000. So it's real critical to do that. So I don't know, Ron, did I miss anything?
I don't think so. Just one last thing, Mr. Chairman, is that these are projects that we can actually spend these dollars this summer. So I think that's an important component. We believe that this being kind of an odd year, bonding year, that we want to make sure that the projects we have on the table are ones that can spend the money this summer.
Representative McGinnis has a question.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Hornack, you said we were well on the way to finishing these levy projects and we're just about finished. But you did not give us a perspective, or at least I missed it. Maybe you gave it and I missed it, of how far along are we on storing the water on the land, that piece of this puzzle. So can you give us a perspective on that?
Mr. Hornack.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius. 3 years ago, 4 years ago, the Red River Basin Commission did a comprehensive water management flood control strategy for the Red River. And our objective is to reduce peak flows on the main stem by 20% at every location along the river. And we have, to date, put in about 7 or 8 structures. We're probably about 10% towards our ultimate objective for floodwater storage in the Red River. The mechanisms that we're using are threefold. One is many of the watershed districts are managing their culvert sizing so that we just don't pass the buck from one section to the next section. That does a couple of things. One is it helps store the water a little bit, slow it down. The other is we are strategically locating retention areas. And these retention areas virtually are eliminating downstream rural infrastructure damages. Some of you have been on the trek out to like North Ottawa project in which is a 3,000 acre floodwater storage area that is managed for floodwater reduction as well as for wildlife habitat. And also for some continued farming, is when we're building some of these projects that are the multi-million dollar projects, we also feel we have an obligation and accountability going O&M of these projects, and that should not necessarily be borne strictly by the taxpayers of those areas. So we feel by providing some revenue sources, by farming some of these areas, that has been a significant benefit for us looking long term.
Follow-up, Representative McGinnis.
Thank you. Okay, we have 90% of it left to do. What's the timeline when we expect that this will be completed?
Mr. Hornack.
Mr. Chairman and Representative McGinnis, we've laid out a rather aggressive 25-year program. A lot of that is going to be dependent upon our capability to provide funding to see those installed. Right now, we did receive some special funding through the USDA that gives us, over the next 5 years, an additional $5 million that can help with these water retention facilities. But we're talking about about 1 million acre feet of storage that's needed to be able to put all these in place. Every one of our watersheds, every one of the watersheds on the Minnesota and North Dakota side, have a plan of action for where in their sub-watersheds we need to achieve a certain degree of water storage. We've got 15 project teams currently going, and we have a rather aggressive effort, and I think we're looking at that 25-year is probably the most optimistic that I can see at this point in time.
Representative Guineas.
Just say one thing. It would be helpful for us to see the math of if we're waiting, you know, it's not going to be completed for 25 years, how much damage are we going to have to pay along the way compared to the cost of doing what you're proposing to do? I mean, mm-hmm. We're missing the context here, and it would be helpful to have that.
Mr. Harnack.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative Wagenius, basin-wide, it's about a 4-to-1 or 7-to-1, depending on the situation. If you're looking at some of the community damages, the rate is higher of our fighting the flood versus prevention. When you're dealing with some of the rural damages, it's more on the range of 4-to-1, the benefit. And so it's easy to say that those costs are really high, and that is true, they are. But also, it isn't always easy to be able to say, here's the dollars, we're going to help you do it. And we can't do it all on our own. We do need state help. We'd like to see more federal help. But for all practical purposes, the federal dollars of years ago have gone by the wayside. And the challenge for us is between the legislature, the state of Minnesota, the local watershed districts, and the landowners. That's basically where we get our sources of dollars for doing this. We have been very beneficial in the Red River Valley because we got a joint powers of watershed districts. And that joint powers of watershed districts has been given some special levy authority that goes into a pool that is allocated back to specific priority projects to help districts. It's kind of like sharing the wealth in the Red River Basin so that we can protect the integrity of the Red River Basin and its economy for the future.
Fiscal disparities.
Well, we are all aren't created equal.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You referenced farming that might generate some revenue. I'm assuming you're working with MMB on to make certain that that meets the test of constitutionality for a state bond funded property.
Mr. Harnack.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative Hausman, yes, we are. And we're trying to schedule a meeting now coming up in the next couple of weeks with the commissioner and staff to talk about how we can more efficiently deal with that issue.
I see no other questions. Representative Keel, do you have some closing remarks?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I thank you very much for hearing this, and I would hope that you would consider it when you look at your entire bonding on bill. And we in the Northwest region, especially the Red River Valley with the flooding situation, very much appreciate all that Minnesota has done to protect the communities in the valley, so, and the farmland too. So thank you very much.
Thanks for coming. Next up, Representative Fabian's Bill 675. Good idea. Welcome to committee, Representative Fabian. Please introduce. We're hearing this for information only, as with the rest of the bills today, but we're interested in the issue, so please go ahead and make an introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you probably will believe this. I'm interested in it, too. As you've heard today, water can be everyone's, depending upon which committee you're in, everyone's best friend and everyone's worst enemy, depending upon which side of it you're on. Flooding in northwest Minnesota is an ongoing thing, just a little historical perspective. You know, I grew up in Fargo, fighting floods starting back as early as 1965 and 79 and 71 and 75. And then I moved to Roseau and started fighting floods up there. Of course, the flood of 97 was fairly historic. And actually, in my community, the flood of 2002, summer flood was unbelievable. We went through a tremendous amount of difficulty, and thankfully, in large part to the legislature and so forth, we were able to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps and make things better. I had a fair amount of damage to my own home, so I understand and I appreciate what people like in the city of Oslo are going through. My bill here is a bill that would appropriate roughly $3.2 million for the Roseau River Watershed District, working in cooperation with the DNR and what we call their Roseau Wildlife Management Area, to do some retention. And then for the city of Oslo, city of Oslo has got about 350 people living there. They've had an ongoing issue with flooding over the years, and it's just one more step, you might say, and Mr. Harnack addressed earlier how we're trying to make some progress. One of the great things that's happened is in the city of Moorhead, they have done an outstanding job there of reaching their 100-year floodplain protection. So there is progress. It's slow. I understand that, but appreciate the opportunity to be here. So with that, Mr. Chair, if it pleases you, I'd like to turn it over to our testifiers.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Hi, my name is Tracy Holstensgaard. I'm the administrator for the Roseau River Watershed District. Our Roseau River Wildlife Management Area Pool 3 Outlet Project is a unique opportunity for the Watershed District to work with the DNR on improving the water management capability on an existing pool structure system. What we're proposing to do is better use the timing of the 8,000 acre feet approximately of flood storage that's available and give them better management capabilities for their natural resource enhancement endeavors. We'll be providing downstream benefits to the communities of Caribou, also to the south of us in Two Rivers Watershed District, by being able to store water that typically now is stored during the peak, and there's no storage available for when the high water actually comes through that area. By being able to free up some of that that storage, we can reduce those peak flows. The NRE portion of that, the natural resource enhancement portion, is the DNR's management will be able to intake that water then sometimes during nesting season for waterfall and not lose critical habitat during those times when nesting is taking place. This is, like I said, a unique opportunity to upgrade, if you will, an existing area. We're not going to be constructing any new dikes, so your bang for your buck on storage is really good with this project. Thank you.
Do you have other testifiers, Representative Fabian?
Chair, I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Sandra Simonson. I'm the newly appointed mayor of Oslo, Minnesota.
Uh-huh. Is it a tough campaign, Mayor?
Well, there was no campaign. That's why I got appointed. So Basically, first and foremost, I would like to thank, you know, we have had wonderful funding in for our project, and we're coming down to the end of it. We have close to getting our dike that we had previously recertified so it meets the federal standards that FEMA has established. We're looking for approximately $560,000 to do this last phase. We're looking at the fall of 2015 to get our system accredited. We've been through the worst part of this building and relocating people and moving dirt and all this stuff, so we're actually just winding down. And in order to complete this project successfully, we do need a little bit more money just to do it right.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Mayor Simonson's comments about being through the worst part now, she gets to become mayor. I know Mayor Scott Kozlotka has worked very, very hard on this. Last winter, they were experiencing an unusually high number of water main breaks in the city. They had 36 of them or whatever, and a terrible blow to their city budget. Ron Harnack is here again, sir, to speak to the projects as well.
I have a question first from Representative Hausman.
We were here just remembering our visit to Oslo and trying to remember, but we're particularly intrigued by the railroad closure structure, which I don't think we've seen anywhere else. And we wondered, does it come up or across? How does that work?
Mayor Simonson.
Well, I actually didn't go out and set it up. So we'll let Ron kind of talk about that a little bit, if you don't mind. He's probably the expert.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Harnack, please introduce yourself for the record.
Ron Harnack, coordinator for the Red River Watershed Management Board. These are actually gates that slide down into the notches that are in the head walls that you see right there. And so they have to be brought in and a closure put down into them. It would be nice, like we're proposing with some of the communities, to have roadways or passages that can be elevated and come over. But as I think somebody else mentioned earlier, trying to get cooperation and working with railroads is like pulling hen's teeth. And but we're trying to do those kinds of things with the state highway department, local county highway departments, where we have roadways that go through. And Oslo is a little bit, you know, not unique in this respect, but the mayor can probably speak to it better than I can. But there have been times when they've been isolated for up to 30 days or more without access and egress except by boat or by helicopter in some instances. And the legislature did provide some funding in partnership with DOT last year to partner with North Dakota and see if we can find some alternatives to provide some flood-free access, which is certainly going to be a challenging issue for the highway departments.
Thank you. I see no other questions. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Noticing this boiler, it looks like boilerplate language. So if this, what percent of this project is ready to proceed and will expend all the money allocated to it? Just curious how,
Representative Fabian,
how that works for the agency.
Or,
well, I don't know. I guess maybe Mr. Harnack. Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair and
Mr. Harnack.
For Mr. Chair and Representative, the funds that you see, the $560,000 that's being asked for by the City of Oslo will be spent in 2015. And the money that's being requested for the ROSO project, ROSO WMA project, that contract will likely be let this summer, construction beginning this fall. We have a little bit of winter construction associated with it because we'll be doing a little bit of work within the WMA pool, and we have to do that when the ground's a little bit more frozen. But our hope is to be able to let these as one project because we can get the bigger bang for a buck if they're going as one.
I see. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Fadim, you have some closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Runbeck's question, the R shovel-ready projects, the WMA project that they just addressed is an ongoing project that has been being worked on in the past. And, you know, I hope this isn't being broadcast up north, but I do appreciate the help that DNR has been giving us on this project as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good thing you're not on my committee. You'd be in big trouble. With that, members, I believe we've completed today's business. This meeting is adjourned.